Welcome back. I've got more guests for an entire hour. A few weeks ago, I guess it was. Wasn't it, Betsy Ingram, producer?
Was
it a few weeks ago? That I schlepped up, as I like to say, to Evanston and went in this really nice apartment and sat behind a microphone and was interviewed by a couple of guys, Gary Zabinski and Frank. How do you pronounce your last name?
Taranjo.
Taranjo.
Is that how you pronounce it?
That is Frank and I.
That's it.
Taranjo. Wait, you've been doing it wrong all this time.
Yeah, really.
Frank and I were going to spend a half hour talking only about Zay Smith and Frank's high school relationship with him. Zay, I know you're not listening now. Zay Smith, the great columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times and the author of Quick Takes, and I had no idea he had a theatrical background. I should have known
he
that.
He did. We did high school theater together. We did a production of The Boyfriend. He played Lord Brockhurst, and I played Percival Brown. We were the two, 16-year-olds playing old men.
Well, you stayed in the arch, and Jay went
into
the other part.
Yeah.
These two gentlemen, and Betsy Ingram as producer, run as fascinating and entertaining and engaging a podcast as there is that I have heard. I know there are a million podcasts out there, but I've listened to plenty because I'm fascinated by the world of podcasting. Their Booth One, which you can find at booth-one.com, is as good as it gets. And that is because you two guys are curious and interested and knowledgeable. And Betsy, as the producer, is equally so and well-organized. Take me back to the beginnings of Booth One. I mean, everybody, there are a lot of people who want a podcast, and a podcast is very easy to do, and they mostly want a podcast so they can listen to themselves talk. That is hardly what you guys are doing with Booth One.
Hardly, yes. Well, when I was in jail in Joliet, Illinois, no, I'm kidding.
Yes.
That's not true.
Well, I've had guests like that on this show.
Yeah. And you will again.
Yeah, I'm sure of that.
We were, as these things happen a lot, we were sitting around one night after a few cocktails.
Sure.
As you know how that
the
can
great
be.
Ideas. Rick. The greatest ideas are born then. Mm-hmm.
And a close friend of mine who I went to college with and I were riffing about some topics here and there, mostly theater, some movie stuff. And our producer, Betsy Ingram here, said, you know, we should be recording this stuff because it's really, really good and people would find it entertaining. And we thought, no, it's crazy.
We thought simply, no.
No, yeah. No. That's never
no.
going to happen. In fact, our first taping, we were so neophyte at the whole thing that we recorded it on an iPad and someone forgot to hit the microphone button. So we talked for an hour and 40 minutes, and nothing got recorded.
The greatest show in the history of Booth One is lost to the
ages.
Lost to the ages.
And it was brilliant. And lost.
So we
pressed the thing.
So we continued down that path, and we just sort of got a little bit better and a little bit better and a little bit better at it every time. And our podcast isn't really about anything specific like the law or medicine or the stock market. We are a podcast about lively conversation, mostly focusing on the arts, a great deal focusing on Chicago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think, Frank, when did you start to get involved? I know you came on as a guest and then all.
I came on as a guest and then I came on as a guest host because the person he's talking about had some medical issues.
Yeah.
They said, he can't do a couple of episodes. Would you come? And I said, sure. And then his medical episodes turned a little more chronic and they said, could you keep doing it? And I'm like, okay. And so I've been a year and a half, I think I've been doing it.
Yeah, about a year.
But one of the hallmarks of the show, and I have listened not to all of them, to almost all of them, and you people are going to get a sample of some of the astonishing guests that you've had on, is that you guys bring your own life experiences to this and your own considerable, wonderful kind of baggage to this. I mean, usually when that term is used, it's always derogatorily. You know, people's baggage is who they are, and it is what they have accumulated through their life. Tell these GN listeners a little about yourselves.
Well,
what's your baggage?
I was born on the South Side. Is that baggage?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
I was too.
See,
actually,
already,
as it
no
turns out,
Frank.
I was lying in hospital at University of Chicago.
There you have and I was raised Catholic and went to an all boys Catholic high school.
Which
now
one?
There's some
Which
baggage.
One?
Marist.
Okay.
Alsip, Illinois. Yeah. Went to college in downstate Illinois for a drama degree, moved to New York for a number of years, got some baggage from that.
No question.
A couple of wives.
At the same time? That's baggage.
Not his wife.
Not in Illinois. Not in New York State. No, not in New York State. And worked in New York for quite some time. In fact, if you have a few minutes a little bit later, I have a couple of good Neil Simon stories.
Oh.
Never quite got
Go ahead.
Neil Simon.
Go.
While I was in New York, I worked for a wonderful producer named Emanuel Eisenberg. Manny Eisenberg happened to be Neil Simon's producer.
Wow.
All the way back to, I think, his first show with Neil was Barefoot in the Park, I believe.
Oh, wow. Yeah. His first massive hit, yeah.
That was Manny's first association with him. So Neil Simon would come into the office quite often because in those days, in the 70s and 80s, and even before that, no one was more famous as a playwright than Neil Simon. I mean, he'd have two or three shows running on Broadway at the same time. And I was lucky enough to production assist on a few of them. I was lucky enough to stage manage a few of them.
Oh, wow.
I remember when I was on national tour with a play that he wrote called I Ought to Be in Pictures, which starred the late, great Bill Macy from Maud fame.
Yeah, sure.
He was terrific in it. And we took it to Los Angeles, and it was a big to-do because Neil came, and his wife was there, and he invited us all to the house on our day off on a Monday. I remember he and Manny Eisenberg challenged each other to a tennis match, and we all had to sit there, and we
watch.
Had to bet on
Were
who was going to win. Neil was pretty good because he lived in California and he didn't have too much time to do anything else. He just played tennis. Manny was okay, but I think he lost that match rather considerably. But everything I remember about Neil Simon was wonderful. He was a very talented man, a very giving man. Loved the theater and loved actors.
Well, you too love the theater too, and you've had a number of actors on. We got to take a break here, but you're going to stay all the way until 10 o'clock to talk about this.
Yes.
These are the boys. I will call them now the boys from Booth One. We will actually tell you because we have to tell you why it's called Booth One, because there may be some of you out there going, what's that mean, Booth One? We all know.
Mm-hmm.
You may not know. You will learn very shortly once we return after a very short break, during which I will tell you first, Chicago Knows Best, right? Hit up Facebook and tell Chicago's Best TV where you like to eat. Watch Chicago's Best Sundays at 10 p.m., which you certainly are not doing. This is the strangest commercial ever read on WGN TV. Your pick may be Chicago's Best. We'll be right back. Welcome back. There are a million podcasts, maybe more than that. I don't know how many podcasts there are. 99% of them are incredibly dull exercises in self-aggrandizement. I mean, I have listened to a number of them. They're like, well, you know, I was funny in high school, so I will be funny on the air. Or I have incredible political insight, so I will bore people for an hour talking politics. It is, you know, you used to only run, before the podcasting world, you would run into these people on the bar stool next to you, and you could walk away. You don't have to indulge in podcasts. But I'm telling you, the Booth One podcast is professionally done. How many episodes do you gentlemen have now, Gary Zabinski and Frank Taranjo?
85.
Is it 85?
85?
85,
yeah.
I can't.
Yeah.
85. You have had, how do you go about, and here, Betsy Ingram, the producer, get in here. The number of guests you've had on and the quality of guests is kind of stunning to me. These are not the usual suspects. They're not the same jokers coming in to promote something. They're generally people who are there to who are interested in sharing their lives with you. Betsy, how do you find these people?
Well,
some are friends of yours.
Some are friends,
community.
And some are suggested by the guest before, or we learn about them from the guest before. We just had Cecilia Wingate on, and She told us about a director and librettist named Jerry Dye, who will be our next guest.
Is it difficult to book guests? Because many people still in this world, gentlemen, don't even know what a podcast is. You know, you're saying, come to a nice apartment in Evanston and sit down at a table and talk to us. They'll get it in the first 5 minutes they're with you, because I have been a guest on the show. But is it a tough sell sometimes, do you find?
I don't think it is. And Betsy kind of sells herself short. I mean, she is out there scrounging.
She really is shy on the radio.
Yeah, no, she is. But she's really...
You're on television.
Yeah. But she's out there really looking and trying to find the best possible people, and she does. And we had Jen Engstrom on the same day you had Jen Engstrom on.
Yeah.
She came right from us to you.
Well, but see, the other thing I like about your format, I mean, we are doing an hour now, but it is interrupted by commercials, and it's interrupted
right.
by news. And the hour you do, I suppose you would like it to sometimes be interrupted and or sponsored by somebody, and that would be a grand idea. But there are ways to do it in the way Studs did it in his old show, where it was an hour of radio. It was an hour of conversation. Mm-hmm. Sometimes breaking that is tough and inhibits the outpouring. Jen Engstrom was on my show for, you know, a 15-minute segment. But on your show, she expanded way.
Yeah, she was the only guest. And I think we talked for like an hour and a half. And then Bessie Gary spent time trimming it down to, you know, usually 50 minutes to 55 minutes.
I'm going to play you an example so you can get a sense of Booth One. It's booth-one.com, where you can hear all of these. Here is my old friend, Tony Fitzpatrick, who was on the show with his son, Max. Tony, the visual artist, poet, actor, man about town. Here's what he said on Booth One.
You're such a multi-talented guy, Tony. You're an
Jerry,
artist,
anything
you're
an to
author.
Avoid honest work. I'm serious about not pushing a wheelbarrow, man.
What do you like about acting? Because it's not the greatest
for the
of professions,
time.
And you don't do it as your sole profession, but you love to do it.
I've always found that the best respite from one creative pursuit, the best way to rest, is another one, which is why I've consistently always written poetry. I've consistently always written. When I was doing the column, my thought was, you know, if I can't say this in the column, I can probably draw this. And if I can't draw this, I can probably say this. So there was a good, nimble, and limber way to keep yourself engaged creatively all the time.
That was Tony Fitzpatrick on Booth One. Do you find, gentlemen, I found it incredibly easy to talk to both of you when we did the show. You do a lot of prep for the show. I mean, I think that that's an aid to the conversation. You're not saying, so, tell us about yourself.
Read the book, as
yeah,
you
yeah,
often
yeah,
say.
Yeah, right.
Read the book. I'll tell you, I've always wanted to have the show be more of a normal, kind of regular conversation, as if we were sitting at a bar or in a booth at a restaurant, and we're just chatting, and things come up and they take us in one direction, other things come up and they take us in some other direction. We had Tony Fitzpatrick on that you just heard, and he was terrific. He and his son, well, surprisingly, have a podcast called The Max and Tony Show.
And I've been on that one, too.
I don't mean to plug somebody else's, but, you know.
But see, the great thing about I don't consider it, someone goes, you're having people from a podcast on your show. I go, wait a minute. You know, we live in an age where I don't know anybody who isn't, you know, I'm sure unless you're senile, you can listen to radio whenever you want to. You can create your own network because of things like
and just podcasts. Your interests.
Exactly.
What you're interested in.
Exactly. I think that somehow, and you guys must have thought about this too, and you too, Betsy, thought about this, of this is the future of radio, I think, is for one person to create their own personal listening experience by pulling from podcasts, by pulling from this station, for instance, puts everything we're talking about will be online by, thanks to Ben Anderson, the producer, be online by tomorrow. And you can pull that, and you can pull that. I think there's a real creative freedom in that kind of thing. Do you know how many people listen to your podcast?
Betsy?
It's hard to find out.
Yeah.
iTunes won't tell you how many subscribers you have.
Right.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah, ridiculous is the word.
But I know we have lots and lots
of
subscribers.
Yeah.
And I can find out how many deliberate downloads happen for every episode. So somebody's going on an airplane and they want to download the Rick Kogan episode.
Yeah.
I can find that out, but not the subscribers who get them regularly.
You two both, though, get a tremendous, tremendous amount of satisfaction just in doing the show, do you not?
I love this man.
We do. We have a great rapport. And what's great is, I mean, Gary does a lot of the preparation, has all these questions prepared, and oftentimes we get to about 50% of them. Because we get someone like yourself who is so interesting that we'll ask them a question and they'll run with it.
Or ramble on. Yes.
That's okay too. If they're interesting enough people, the rambling is good, you know?
Well, part of my job is to kind of rein people in a little bit and steer the conversation into maybe another direction that I think might be interesting for our listeners.
You guys are really good at what you do. I mean, you really are good at what you do.
Well, I think we're both spontaneous. I mean, it's very easy for us as someone is talking. There's an example.
Also bring that baggage I was talking about. You bring a lot of life experience to the conversation. Frank, talk a little about your experience after being in these noted shows with Zay Smith. What did you do after that?
After high school.
Yeah.
Well, I went on and got a degree from Elmhurst College in English. Taught for a while, then got a master's degree at University of Illinois in theater, and then taught for a while, and then got a PhD at Southern in speech communication. And full disclosure here, when I taught at Fenton High School in Bensonville, Betsy was my high school student, so I've known her for many, many, many years, which is why she thought of me when they needed someone. Yeah.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
That's really.
And there are lots of Betsy stories.
We'll have a Betsy hour.
Jen Engstrom's mentor.
Yes, Jen Engstrom was also my student.
Jen Engstrom is one incredibly talented ensemble member of the Red Orchid Theater, which she shares the stage occasionally with Michael Shannon. Have you had him on? You haven't yet.
We have not had Michael.
He's busy. I mean, that's a thing. About
I know.
Michael.
We've tried and tried, and he just.
We'll get him on.
You try to do this as best you can weekly, correct?
Every 2 weeks, unless I'm in some weird place that I can't, because I do travel a lot.
You are a world traveler, Frank.
I kind of am, but why not? I'm retired, so I get to do that.
Your passport must be worn out by now.
I got a new one, actually, in 2018.
I knew it.
What you're listening to is the relationship that these two have is a real, I think, charming foundation for the Booth One podcast. Let's not keep people in suspense any longer. What is Booth One? I happened to be last night, after many, many months, if not years, away from the place where Booth One was invented.
Uh-huh.
Why did you name your show Booth One?
We were sort of scrambling around for a proper name for what we wanted to do. And as I said earlier, Rick, we were interested in having a conversational show, one that was as natural and as entertaining and lively as possible. And where can you do that? You can do that in restaurants and bars and people's dining rooms. Mm. Well, we latched on to the famous Booth One, which was the first booth on the right-hand side as you entered the pump room in the old Ambassador East Hotel, all of which has now been renamed. But the Booth One there still exists in some fashion. The original Booth One is now in the Chicago History Museum.
After being in Irv Cups in its house and being at the Chicago History Museum.
Kitchen, like his dinette.
Right.
This is where all the celebrities would make sure they got to sit when they came to town. Frank Sinatra on down.
Yeah, and there was Carol Channing.
Oh, you can name a celebrity.
Anybody. If you went to Chicago, you sat in Booth One.
At the table, and, you know.
And Cup was often. Irv Cup
was there, and he would interview people there.
In that booth, and that's where, in the age before the internet and the age before iPhones, that's where he became Cup. That's where you learned, because Humphrey Bogart was drunk there, what his next movie was. And that's where, who was it? I can't remember. Someone who was kissed the first time. Last night, sitting in booth one, was Michael Wilbon, the Washington Post sports writer and ESPN star, who actually was quite nice. I was not sitting with him, but I was boorishly came up and told him I liked his writing.
Well, we've taken.
I told him I liked his writing, and I thought the woman he was sitting with was drop dead gorgeous, and I walked away. Yeah, it's not the old pump room. We got to take a break, but these gentlemen talking about Booth One and their producer, Betsy Ingram, will be on here for the rest of this hour. You'll hear some more very interesting. I mean, they've had everybody on this show. Helen Prejean, Stuart Dybeck, Jen Engstrom. I want to hear from Jen on this thing, too. So please stay tuned. Welcome back. I know I have a radio show, and there are a number of other radio shows out there. There are also an increasing number of podcasts out there, and again, I'll say it, 99.9% of which are junk and self-indulgent, and they're ego trips for people who can't get on real radio. One exception, however, is the podcast Booth One, Booth, BOOTH-ONE.com, named after the famous Booth One at the old pump room. It is co-hosted by Gary Zabinski and Frank Taranjo. Zay will correct me on the pronunciation of that name. Former high school classmate
I've been called worse.
Of Zay Smith's.
Yep.
They are the co-host. Betsy Ingram's the producer. And I think this thing over 80-some episodes has a incredibly valuable trove of conversations with all manner of people. Before we get back to conversing among ourselves, let's hear a bit of Jen Engstrom, who I think is one of the most talented actresses this town has ever seen, and also a seriously good person.
Well, it's another episode of Booth One, where we celebrate the art of lively conversation about the performing arts and popular culture. Gary Zabinski here, alongside my co-host, Frank Taranjo. Today, we have a distinctive guest in the studio. You've heard her voice already, the outstanding actress Jennifer Engstrom. Welcome to the booth, Jen.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored.
It's so nice, Frank, to have a female voice on the podcast.
It is.
We haven't had one in a while, and it just...
Oh, yeah.
Sparks the whole thing up.
She does light up the room, as she always does.
The computer's on fire. Jennifer is a Red Orchid Ensemble member, as was our last guest, Brett Nevue.
That's right.
Where she has appeared in over a dozen productions. In addition, she has played the Angel of America in David Cromer's production of Angels in America. That was in Kansas City, wasn't it?
That was in Kansas City. Yeah, that was an incredible experience, of course. We did both parts with about 3.5 weeks rehearsal.
Oh, wow.
So the very, I mean...
It's about 3.5 weeks long.
Yeah, right, exactly. 7 hours of show. We did more first parts than we did second parts. And so as the angel was problematic because the epistle is in the second act, the big, she breaks through the ceiling and delivers this epistle. And I did it on a 15-foot rolling ladder on about a probably 5-foot level on a stage. So I was towering. I wasn't literally flying, but I was soaring sort of through space on a rolling ladder moved by a crew person with wings that inhibited my use of my hands. So it was harrowing, to be honest. It was. And also delivering this sort of otherworldly text. Kushner, actually, I met Tony Kushner in this experience. He came, he didn't see the show because apparently at that point he said he does not like seeing versions of the show, even though they're doing it now in New York. But it is too bad because I think that David Cromer loved the show and really pulled out things that I think Kushner intended when he wrote it originally, in that you see the strings, you know, it's meant to be a play and it's meant to be received as a play. And so you see the sort of machinations and workings. But anyway, the first thing that Tony Kushner said to me was, and he wrote it in my book because I brought my script so that he would sign it. And he signed, "Sorry, the epistle is so hard." I know.
That's a great story.
That is a great story.
Yeah, she has a million of those.
Well, but you guys have heard so many great stories. And one of the other things that is the hallmark of Booth One is you share your own stories, too. and this is not a 20 questions kind of show. It truly is, gentlemen, a conversation. And has it gotten, Gary and Frank, does it get easier, or are you confronted with each new guest with a series of kind of challenges?
I think we've been so lucky that the guests have been so forthcoming that it never really has been hard. I mean, it's been fun. I look forward to it. And like I said, there is some preparation. We have some questions to ask, but then they run with it. And they're so interesting and so personable and interactive that it's not hard really at all. At least not yet.
Having done some 80 episodes, what you must at this point, and we've talked about it a little off the air, have some ambitions for the show.
Do we?
Do we?
Not to look like morons.
We have very, very low expectations. Our ambitions are just to do the finest hour-long conversation every couple of weeks that we can.
Wow, that's great.
And you asked if it gets easier or harder. I find it as hard each time I go
really?
Into it.
Wow.
And it takes the first 10, 12 minutes with the guest to really put me at ease, especially if the guest is very forthcoming, like you were on our program, like Jen Engstrom, as you heard. That was the very top of our program.
Yeah.
She started it off with a bang.
Well, it's,
and
you know,
the rest was
and Tony Fitzpatrick's a pretty good talker himself. Yeah.
He has a few words inside that he'd like to get out.
What about someone like when you've had a couple people, Mark Larson, who is writing a detailed history of Chicago theater on Twice, and Stuart Dybeck on Twice. There are some people who just deserve 2 hours.
They do. And they also have lots to say, and it's all fascinating, at least to me.
Yeah, I would say that Mark was very nervous the first time, because I think, as you said, he didn't really know what a podcast was. He thought maybe it was live, I think,
or
it feels like it's live, because you're sitting in front of these
microphones. How did you get him, then? How did Betsy, you want to come in on this? Did you help get him?
What did we pay him?
Mark Larson. Oh, yeah.
But we pay everybody.
I just had read about what he was doing about the history of Chicago theater, and I thought, we have to have him.
And you just called him and said, would you like to come on this podcast?
Yep.
And he said, what's a podcast? And he showed up.
And he said he'd love to. Yeah.
But you guys obviously have a way of putting people at ease. I mean, you guys,
We seem to, because they kind of go beyond. Like when Stuart Dybeck was on,
interesting.
I mean, first of all, it was a great conversation. Afterwards, I told him I was going to be going to Prague. And he's like, oh, I go to Prague every summer. You've got to go here. You've got to go here. And then he wrote me this whole big, long thing about all the different places I should see in Prague and what I should do. He didn't have to do that. But
no, of course not.
We established enough of a rapport that he wanted to.
Well, how did Stuart Dybeck come to the show? That's a very interesting. Stuart Dybeck, for those of you who don't know, is the greatest living short story writer in the world, put simply. Also a legendarily inspiring teacher. How did he...
He's an old friend.
There you go.
And tell why.
A number of years ago, I directed a piece based on his collection of short stories called Coast of Chicago. We did it at the Looking Glass Theater as a sort of a rental situation, or a co-producing situation, I guess is more accurate. And he and I became very close during that process. He was very generous with his time and generous with the project. Betsy was also the producer of that piece. So we've been friends for a long time.
Yeah.
And again, just called him up, and he's extremely busy, and he's rather shy.
No question.
Very.
Stuart is, I find him one of the nicest people.
Oh, totally.
In Chicago. I don't know everybody in Chicago, but of public figures in Chicago, he is as nice a man as you will find.
Absolutely.
A real gentleman, but you're right, he is also shy. I think part of it is, you know, I've never seen him teach. I'll bet he's a little more gregarious in teaching,
I would think.
And he pours a great deal into his work.
Yeah, I don't think he likes to talk about himself very much.
Yeah.
He does like to talk about the art of writing.
Yep.
If you get him started on that,
which we did,
mm-hmm. then you're golden.
Mm-hmm. Well, after a commercial break, we'll listen to Stuart Dybeck from Booth One. I hope you're getting a good sense, ladies and gentlemen, of not only the variety of the Booth One podcast, but of the incredible substance of it. Again, it is booth-one.com. We'll take a break, and I'll tell you that the Steve Cochran Show has free White Sox tickets for you Monday at 8:40, so tune in. They don't give away anything free on booth1.com podcast. We'll be back in a couple minutes, and we'll hear what Stuart Dybeck had to say on Booth One. Talking about nerves, nerves off air. Once again, the Gary Zabinski and Frank Taranjo and Betsy Ingram from Booth One, the podcast. That's booth-one.com. You will spend, if you go there now, you will spend the next week listening to a series of 80-some interviews with me and Tony Fitzpatrick and Brett Neveau and and Mark Larson and Stuart Dybeck. I'd love to hear, because Stuart Dybeck is among my favorite people on the planet. And he does not do, you know, it's not like Stuart's going to be on Windy City Live talking about his short stories.
Right.
If we could, Aubrey, hear what Stuart Dybeck had to say on Booth One.
Let's go back to theater for a minute, because I know that it's something that you love to view, mm-hmm. and it's something that you do a lot in your free time. You go to a lot of off-loop theater here in Chicago, and I assume you go to theater all over whenever you're traveling, and you always find something enormously rewarding each time you do. Every time I run into you on the street, virtually, you tell us about a production that you just saw.
I spare you the ones... I mean, the thing about Chicago theater that I love is that people take chances, and they're honest to God real chances. And that means that there is a rate of failure. And I just kind of don't talk about those. I go in knowing that that's a real possibility. But it never discourages me, just the opposite. You know, I'm happy that I'm living in a city that makes it possible for people to take to be edgy, to take chances.
Yeah.
Over at the Harris, they did this one act opera. It really is, in fact, a monologue, which is one of the reasons I rushed over to see it. And it's a woman on the phone saying goodbye to her lover. And I would put the Harris into that, even though it is not a storefront. I mean, one of the things that's wonderful about that theater is that they take chances. You'll see things there that you just won't see anywhere else.
Yeah, you get Stuart talking about theater or writing or art. And as I said, you're golden. He's just
he's
phenomenally
incredibly thoughtful guy.
He is.
Bit of a genius.
Yeah, you're right. I don't think there's
maybe not even
about
a bit.
Yeah. But the other thing about you gentlemen and you too, Betsy, is the fact that you get out and see things too. You're not living in a closet. You bring that also to the Booth One thing. You share, you know, I've heard some on all the shows I've listened to, some very, you know, forthright and intelligent reviews of various shows around town.
We do. We see them around town. And then I just got back a little while ago from New York and saw a bunch of stuff. And then they were in New York and saw a bunch of stuff. And we're also going, one of our next podcasts, our film guru, Dan Pal, is going to come in. He and I are going to the Toronto Film Festival.
Oh, neat.
And so when we get back, we're going to do a podcast on that. Hopefully, we'll see a lot of the hot releases that are going to be coming out for this fall. So,
well, you guys, all three of you have a real passion for performance. Take in a we phrase,
did.
Yeah.
We did. Yeah, without question. Well, Frank was a teacher for years and years. I was, and director.
Speech coach, all that stuff.
All of that stuff. I've been involved in the theater for some odd years. Sure. I was going to mention to you that this week is the 50th anniversary of the 1968 Democratic National Convention.
Oh,
and I know that that's something that you know extremely well, and yeah. I heard that, and I realized it, and I heard it on the news the other day, and boy, did I feel old.
Yeah, no. Oh, you're telling me. Well, the funny thing about the convention, they asked me to write a piece about it, and is it of because I worked the basement of the Hilton for the fetching coffee and cigarettes for the Sun-Times and Daily News reporters working there, and I had ever thought until about a week ago that it had changed my life. And I realized in thinking deeply about it, it didn't change my life at all.
Hmm.
And I realized, and I didn't at the time, that, wow, the Vietnam War lasted 7 more years. And the inequities that the best of the demonstrators were fighting against are worse than ever. Yeah. And we have, it was, you know, you like to think, people like to think that if they are a participant, even a minor one, in a momentous event, that they too are more important. And I realized I wasn't. Mm-hmm. I saw it. It was ugly and terrifying, and I moved on.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was quite something. Where were you, 68, boy?
68, I was a senior in college.
Oh, wow.
And, talking about Vietnam, I'm going to Vietnam on a cruise. Quite
wow.
Different. Wow. In December.
Oh, how so interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah, I know. I didn't get to go 50 years ago. Yeah. I didn't want to.
No,
but I am
did.
Going.
Be a little safer now.
I thought I'd wait until it calmed down just a tad.
Yeah.
But
a helicopter waiting just in case.
Well, I'll have a cruise ship waiting. But yeah, I'm excited about it. People I know who have gone there have absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
And it also goes to Thailand, and it goes to Hong Kong and Singapore.
Oh,
too.
What an interesting cruise.
But yeah, it should be. I'm sure I'll talk about it on the podcast.
Well, of course you will.
I was 10.
You were 10. I was a senior in college.
Where were you? Where were you?
Growing up on the South Side.
Yeah. Where in the South Side did you grow up? Where?
Well, we lived in the sort of 47th and Spalding area for quite some years. And we moved out closer to Midway Airport.
Sure.
A little bit closer to where my grandparents were living. I've spent most of my older adolescent years in Orland Park.
Okay,
on the
sure. Know where it is. Know it well.
Way out in the suburbs when it was still just cornfields and soybeans.
Stewart's a Southsider too, man. Stewart Dyke is a Southsider. I mean, there's a lot of town. Mark Smith, the inventor of the poetry slam, is also a Southsider. The South Side has had some rough times, and West Side too. I mean, I think of the riots in the wake of Dr. King's assassination, which terrified everybody.
Yep.
Who have you tried to get on the Booth One podcast that you have not been able to get?
Hmm.
Who are some of your who are dream now, Betsy Ingram, dream? Who are some of your dream guests? Because the lineup, ladies and gentlemen, when you go to the website, which is a really lovely website, booth-one.com, and see all the people they've had, you'll be hard-pressed to say, well, I'm glad you haven't had Rahm Emanuel on. But that's what a personal opinion. But who have you? Who are some dream guests you'd like to have on?
I tried too early to get some of the stars from Hamilton.
Yeah.
And I should have waited a little longer because they were inundated with press requests.
Oh, sure.
But I think if I circle back around, we might be able to get Alex Sagamore or...
And Michael Shannon, you mentioned. We'd love to have
Brian
him.
Shannon, Thomas Kail, the director of Hamilton.
Yep.
Lynn, of course, would be...
Yeah, he would be great.
One of these
Dobby
days.
Diggs.
Yeah.
We'll get some.
Yeah.
WJN has a long reach. Perhaps he's listening.
I don't know if Lin-Manuel Miranda has been on this show.
Perhaps he's listening.
He could.
Lin, if you're listening, this is Gary and
down.
Frank. We'd love to have you up to beautiful Evanston, Illinois.
Right.
High atop.
We'd like to have Laura Linney.
Sure.
And
sure.
We have a mutual friend, mutual very close friend, so that's not out of reach.
And didn't you have some connection with Debbie Diggs? You had about getting him, so hopefully he's one of the original Hamilton people.
Yeah.
And won a Tony Award.
Did win a Tony Award.
Now, you've all seen Hamilton, right?
A couple of times.
Yes.
And?
Yes. That's great. That's great. I mean,
words can't really describe. It deserves every accolade you can possibly give it, I think.
How do you imagine, though, because you three are very knowledgeable about this, how do you imagine that it might wind up, and I don't know the answer, is changing the face of the American theater? It is a moment, no question.
Mm-hmm.
But Rent was a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Hair was a moment.
Absolutely.
Do you think it has the potential to alter the landscape? I'm not sure it does.
I don't know that it'll alter, but I think it will bring in more shows like that. I think there will be more shows with a hip-hop vibe to it. I was one of the ones who saw In the Heights off-Broadway.
Yeah, right.
I mean, that huge
first show.
You were the one?
I was. No, actually, it was quite popular.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. It was very popular.
It was off-Broadway, and I had heard about it, so I went to see it, and I thought, I don't know about like rap and a musical. Am I going to like this? However, what's great about that, if anybody hasn't seen either of those shows, is that instead of dialogue, they do this kind of rap, which gives you dialogue, but it keeps the rhythm going in the show. So you have your songs, but then in between you have this dialogue that goes along with kind of a beat to it. And I thought, wow, that really works. And then, of course, it became Sublime in Hamilton. So I think there's going to be more of that. I think you're going to have your traditional shows. You're going to have your revivals. I don't think it's going to change the face of Broadway, but it's going to bring some new blood to Broadway.
Yeah,
that's
the one thing troubling me in the minute we have left is, you know, all of a sudden, you know, do I want to go see, you know, Legally Blonde, the musical? No. Do I want to go see Tootsie, the musical? No. It's like what's happened in the movie business. Like
Pretty Woman. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty Woman. These are the shows coming out of the Hamilton.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you guys explore this on your podcast. It has been a real treat to have producer Betsy Ingram and co-host Gary Zabinski and Frank Taranjo in here talking about their show, 85 episodes or so of Booth One, the podcast, booth-one.com. You guys do an amazing job.
Thank you, Gary. Very inspiring.
You're
great.
Thank you.
Insightful, it's entertaining, and it's engaging, and it also is informative, and that is what those qualities of a radio show or a book has those. You win. You win. Thank you.
We appreciate your support.
So thanks for listening, everybody. Carla Mari is coming up. Aubrey Mumpower is the world's greatest engineer. Ben Anderson is the world's greatest producer. And I will see you next weekend on the radio.